Welcome to Create Photography. This is Daniel. In today's episode, I will have a conversation with Ross Boswell. Ross, who photographs under the name Atmospherics, is a Vancouver native artist, photographer, and creative director with over 30 years experience working professionally in the visual arts. Ross' imagery has been featured on many album cover designs throughout a wide variety of musical genres with a leaning towards electronic and ambient music. Subjects Ross is exploring include vast landscapes captured across the globe. Ross, welcome to Create Photography. I look very much forward to speaking with you today.
Hello, it's great to be here. Looking forward to it.
Great. Ross, I understand you're a Vancouver native. Vancouver is a beautiful city. I don't know it that well, admittingly, but I've been there a couple times. And the nature of the Canadian West Coast seems stunning. Do you mind telling me a little bit about maybe your upbringing in that area and perhaps also a little bit about Vancouver?
Oh, absolutely. I'm born and raised in Vancouver, which, like, what makes Vancouver great is just it's a very cosmopolitan city, and it brings in people from all over the world. But yeah, I mean, you know, like I was born here, and, you know, when you're born and raised here, you're kind of immersed in this whole, what we call sea to sky country. And meaning that, you know, you can be ocean kayaking in the morning, and then you can be hiking in the Alpine by the afternoon.
Yeah,
and that's what we call sea to sky, and it's just an amazingly beautiful area, and you know, we almost take it for granted that we have all these mountains and wildlife and scenery just in our backyard, you know.
Yeah,
and we're really integrated with nature here, I think.
Right,
even though we're in a fairly, you know, third largest city in Canada.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I kind of remember from it too. And it seems like, I think I was more in the summertime, but, you know, there's a lot of biking going on, a lot of outdoor activity
absolutely. Yeah. And you know, like there's people who just their entire lives are about that. Like everything is about how you live outdoor and integrate your lifestyle
right
into nature and outdoors here.
Yeah.
It's really great to see. I would say I'm in between. I'm more on the artist side where I love outdoors, but I need to be creating and
right.
photographing
right.
and things.
Yeah.
And I kind of blend those two things, but there's a lot of people who it's all about fitness.
Right.
And hiking right. and outdoor activity, you know.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah. Well, and that brings me to my next question. So you know, one of your big subjects, it's probably fair to say, is landscape, photography, and, you know, very artistic, beautiful landscapes and mountainscapes as well. And you know, and you're photographing really globally. And we talked a little bit before we started the recording, you know, you're going sometimes on road trips, but I know that is mentioned too, that, you know, you're photographing and all. You've photographed in all kinds of locations worldwide, but I'm kind of curious, how did you start? You know, you've been in the art side of things for a long time, but how did you get into photography specifically? And how did that start?
My history of photography goes well back into my childhood. When I was given like a Kodak Instamatic camera when I was a kid, like just this used thing that, you know, like nobody in my family was using it. So I was like, started buying film for it.
Yep.
And just started snapping pictures with it. And ever since then, it's really led me on this visual art, music, like it was a gateway into art, I think. Mm-hmm. I used it in an unconventional way. Everything I've ever done, I've tried to use in unconventional ways in my own way. Mm-hmm. You know, learn the basics and then go from there. So I don't know if that answers the question, but that was pretty much my gateway, you know,
right.
just
right.
an old film camera that you had to buy cartridges for that I just
right.
started started snapping with.
And yeah.
from there, it just opened up everything.
And was it right away? Was it the landscapes right away, or was it just kind of?
It was just everything around
everything.
My,
okay.
Everything around my environment, and then you know, like nothing serious. I didn't know that I had an eye or anything for it then. But I think when things really started to happen was in high school, in art and graphics classes, where it was pretty clear I had a passion for it, and I was mm-hmm. told that, and basically my world just started to revolve around that.
Mm-hmm.
And any free time I had was in the dark room. You know, if I had lunch hour, I'd be in the dark room. And it's just a passion that it was
that's
like
cool.
it was just you know, a magnetic passion I
right.
had to use this
yeah.
to use this you know, process to express my vision.
So from there, so you've been working in the visual arts professionally for over 30 years. How did you get into, I guess, the professional side of things? You know, from
from there. Okay, so when I got out of high school, I didn't really know what I wanted to do, and then I went to school for recording engineering for music. And that's a really hard industry to crack. And then from there, I thought, okay, what can I do with that? And then I went to school for, applied for television, to get into television broadcast here, mm-hmm. and at the technical school called BCIT, which is probably the biggest technical institute in the province, one of the biggest in the country. And that took me a long time to get in. And so that meant volunteering for cable television stations and just anything that I could do to kind of give me a better background in television and media. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that was I spent a lot of time doing that and finally got accepted to this program. And from there, I started getting into more video and film type things. And then through that, I was still shooting film and, you know, a lot of our projects we had to like document visually, and I'd be shooting then too. And then I also tried to get into the film industry, shooting stills and things like that. But, you know, and then when I got out of that program, this lots of creative things in music were happening. I've always been really into music, and so I started going to warehouse parties, and it was, you know, this would be the early rave scene.
Oh, sure.
And,
yeah.
I started doing a lot of flyers for raves and warehouse parties. And then from there, people started asking me to do more corporate type things, you know, like identity projects for new companies, logos, business cards, all this kind of stuff. And it just all just blossomed from there. And then, and so it just all took off. And from that point, from working on, you know, small art projects and like album cover jobs for bands or whatever, just right into doing corporate art, like anything from retail to packaging to, you know, full identity projects for new companies, you know, sky is the limit, really.
Yeah.
And
is that something you're still doing, Ross? So the kind of the corporate commercial work,
it is for sure, but I'm doing way more of my own work now.
Oh, cool.
And like the whole the whole pandemic changed a lot of that for me too.
Yep.
Because a lot of, you know, a lot of clients just cut back their budgets big time. And
oh, sure.
First thing that went for a lot of graphic designers was, you know, these, like, I'm more into print than I am web, and mm-hmm. you know, doing website branding. And although I can do that too, mainly what I did is on the print side, especially packaging. And a lot of clients has cut back those budgets big time. So from mm-hmm. there, I've really gone into, and it, you know what, I'm really happy about it. It's allowed me to do more of the projects mm-hmm. that I want to do of my own artwork. So really, I think it was a blessing in disguise, you know,
and
it's just given me more time to really yeah. focus on my own artwork.
Oh, that's awesome. And so, you know, when I look at your work on your website, and we'll of course link to that in the show notes as well. You know, I feel like, you know, I definitely see a nice consistency across and, you know, a certain voice or style. And so I'm always curious about that, you know, so how, and I know it's probably difficult to describe, but when would you say did you kind of find your voice or style, or, you know, is that something you're even thinking about, I guess?
Yeah, it definitely is. I'm not bound to it. You know, okay. I'm always trying to explore ways to within my style to expand my style. But I think it's very important for artists to create their own voice. And you have to like cut your vision out through all the noise around you. Like you have to somehow stand out within everything else around you, like all the great artwork that's around you. I think I don't try to copy anybody. Mm-hmm. I don't try to copy any other style. I just try to what is my unique voice? Mm-hmm. And like, I'm influenced by things that I see in other artwork or whatever, but I think it's so important to cut out your own voice, and whether, you know, like you don't know how people are going to respond to it sometimes. Mm-hmm. And like, I think a lot of people get discouraged that maybe, you know, they're not getting the approval from the outside that they want of their own style. But I think you have to be your own worst critic, mm-hmm. and really take the positives and then work on the things that maybe aren't that aren't responding to, you know, like, and, mm-hmm. and try to, it's really tough. You know, you don't want to be reactive to people's judgment of your
right.
artwork. But at the same time, you have to somehow try to keep attracting a wider audience, you know, maybe, mm-hmm. and maybe that just takes time, and maybe it's just getting your work into the right avenues, but
right.
you know, you should never be, I don't think anybody should be discouraged about the
right.
fact they're not getting mainstream approval from anything. It's just your own personal voice is much more important than that.
Right.
And, yeah. Just keep working on your own style, I think.
Right. It's so important. And did you ever work with, you know, to get feedback, or, you know, I mean, I'm not talking about social media now, but did you ever work with, for example, mentors, or did you ever, or work with other photographers, or?
Not mentors, but I have really, really key influences from my past that are like my benchmark, that, you know, I don't like I'm not trying to emulate any their style or anything, but more so how did they create their voice, and what is it about their work that made people really respond to it, you know? Mm-hmm. And the whole creativity and artwork just moves so fast. Like you can be doing one style and then for some reason, you know, it's not flavor of the moment anymore, and then people move on, but it doesn't, you know, all that work that was done in the past is still great artwork.
Right.
And it, you know, I don't know where I'm going with this, but more so, you know, like instead of working with actual other artists, collaborating with them, which I have done. I've done mm-hmm. some collaborations through Instagram. But I think it's more so just drawing these little these little snippets out from the past and applying them to what I do now, is important. It's probably, you know, you could call it sort of indirect mentoring, I guess. Really trying to look at the people I admire from artwork, the artists in the past, and try to kind of see what their process was to getting to where they were.
What are some of those influences?
Most importantly, from music, I would say it would be work done for 4AD Records in the 80s by Vaughn Oliver and Nigel Grierson, I think. Especially Nigel Grierson's photography. I mean, even though, like, if you look at my work, it doesn't look like his work, you know. But there's something in the mood, tones, and textures that definitely I feel is where I'm trying to, somewhere where I'm trying to get to sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not as abstract as his work, because I'm working with landscapes, and right. I don't try to, like, you know, like I'm not trying to. Sometimes they're abstract, but sometimes it's more about mood and feel and tones,
right?
And light, right, and all that, right? But there's something about the tonal textures and colors and things that where I think that's just such a, his influence has been such a powerful part of my visual taste, you know, through photography, mm-hmm. that it definitely comes out, and it still comes out to, you know, now.
So I suppose would it be fair to say that his work is, we probably know it from a bunch of records.
Oh yeah. Like anybody, you know, if you're into like sort of post-punk music through the 80s, I mean, the label's still going now, but they don't use his work anymore. I don't think, I don't think he's associated with the label anymore. And then, the other guy, Vaughn Oliver, he died a couple of years ago. But yeah, it's extremely, extremely popular to anybody. Like if you know music by the Cocktail Twins,
yep,
or anybody like that, you know, mm-hmm. yeah, those covers are just incredible.
Yep. Oh, that's cool.
So, and that's just one influence. I mean, other influences for me, a lot of cinematic ones like Stanley Kubrick and people like that. But I sort of use influences aside from the ones mentioned, I sort of use influences lightly. And there's a lot of influences that I have currently just from my peers, people I associate with on Instagram or, you know, other social media that I've seen. I mean, there's just so much great artwork out there. And that's another reason why I really try to create my own voice. I'm not trying to apply what I see.
Right.
Like, we're just flooded and bombarded with images.
Absolutely.
I try not to like let that clutter my
vision
too much. Yeah.
Right. Right. Let's talk a little bit about your connection to the music industry. We talked quite a bit about this already in a way, but I actually discovered your work by browsing some ambient music, and I was actually fascinated by one of your album covers.
Oh, great.
Which then, you know, connect me to you, to your website. So how did you initially connect to the music industry, and then, you know, how did it evolve from there?
Initially, like way back, like, you know, when I was in high school, I had friends in bands, and they were like, "Oh, can I use this photo for on a poster or whatever?" So that'd be like the initial connection. During high school and just after, I took my camera to a lot of shows. I put it like. Stuff it, you know, I had a little Pentax ME, and I used to just put it down my pants and smuggled it into shows. Yeah. And some of these shows are crazy, like punk rock shows or post-punk. You know, just this really, you know, crowds who are pretty...
Go pretty wild.
Pretty wild crowds. And yep. So you're in there, you're getting slam danced or whatever. You're trying to take a shot. And I love that. I absolutely loved it. And that's, you know, and then I'd have bands asking me, you know, to use pictures or whatever. And then from there, you know, like I just love being around bands and music. And then in the early 90s, I started managing a band and doing their lights and visuals. And, you know, just all when we're like during the warehouse party scene and all that. And we tried to cross bands with DJs and all that. And so there's all this different media that we brought to it. And, you know, that's, and from then on, like we started a record label with two of the guys from the, or two or three of the guys from the band that I was managing after they broke up at the end of the 90s. And that went on for almost 20 years.
Oh, wow.
We were never huge, but we'd have these little points where, you know, we get asked to play a music festival in England. We play the Big Chill Festival in England a few times, and I go DJ or whatever. And again, there's all this media that's needed for this.
Right.
Album covers, you know, flyers, on like websites and whatever. So, yeah, and we have just kept going, and then we dissolved that label. I wanted to get more into ambient music because this was kind of down tempo mm-hmm. beats and things, you know. And I just felt like I wanted to kind of progress from that and get into more ambient. So, a friend of mine was all game for it, and we did. So we started North Silver, which is also a record label of Density and a visual collective that on Instagram. I don't know if you've seen that account.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we just, and like what I love about it now is that we make our own music called Montane under the name Montane District,
mm-hmm.
which is, this is another platform to be able to use as a springboard into like more visual stuff. I can use it for all my analog photography for Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
I create this visual flow using my film work for that account.
Hmm.
And then we collaborate musically with all these different ambient artists that we've created these associations with through Instagram. And that's great. I love it. And, you know, we don't have a massive amount of listeners and followers, but we stay really true to the sound that we want to do and our own sound while mm-hmm. we associate with kind of ambient music. We love ambient music, but we also don't want to be associated entirely with sleep and relaxation music.
Yeah.
I've done that. Like, I know what those associations can be like to really pigeonhole you. I saw that happen during our last label when we did.
Hmm.
Downtempo music was pigeonholed as chill out music, and then mm-hmm. you become really typecasted into one genre,
right?
And so we just want to do our own sound and keep working within that, and keep collaborating with these amazing musicians that mm-hmm. you know. There's no way I would have ever had an opportunity to work with people like this had we not started this.
Right.
And I absolutely love it. It's nothing we do for money or anything.
Right.
This is purely collaboration and creative expression. And it's just so pure. You know, I love it.
Is Montane, Ross's Montane District. So is it an album or is it more than that? Is it
Montane District is the our recording entity. So
it's the recording entity. Okay, yeah, got it. Okay.
It's myself and a good old longtime friend of mine, Paul McNeil.
Okay.
And yeah, so.
So you guys are So you're bringing in the visual side of things, but also the music. Yeah. I mean, so you collaborate.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, with ambient musicians in this case.
Yeah. If we collaborate with another ambient musician, we release under that. Like, but our own releases that they're strictly Montane District. Those are our own albums and singles. We're working on a new album right now for coming out in February. And then our next release, we're working with a guy named Jay Clifton based in Toronto. And we just did, you know, it's really interesting. He records using analog tape devices and reel to reels to create these drone sounds. Hmm. And then we applied our own organic process to that. And it's really wild what you come up with, you know. And then from there, we create these soundscapes. And then from there, I'll do the visual side. I'll do the cover, or we'll collaborate on the cover, or whatever. Like, we collaborate right down to the titles of the tracks.
Oh, cool.
You know? Yeah.
But you're involved in the audio side then as well. Do I understand that correct?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Cool.
So like, my background is, I come from a DJing background, but I also play a bit of guitar and I play bass.
Yep.
I never used to do this, but I'm adding my own synth elements to tracks now. And I do most of the mixing and most of the final arrangement on our own tracks. But again, it's a collaboration. It's always, the decisions are always made between two of us on everything.
That's cool.
So that's
cool. Are you guys, just technical question, is this more on the analog side of things, or you mentioned tape, but you know, depends on, but do you get, well, for you guys, are you guys doing?
It's very, we use both.
Okay.
So Paul would have all these different instruments in his studio, like from, you know, synthesizers and guitars. Mm-hmm. I have two guitars. I have a bass guitar and, amps. I record all that through the amp. I could go straight into my computer. I don't normally do that because I want to capture all the sound around and coming out of an amp. I want to capture the electric analog part of that. So, and then from there, we'll use the latest digital equipment, you know, like we'll use the latest plugins and digital audio workstations. And we both use Logic to put everything together.
Yeah, Logic. Okay, got it. Yeah. Oh, that's very cool. Very cool. Quickly shifting gears a little bit, but I'm curious how and why you decided to photograph under atmospherics. The name makes a ton of sense to me when I look at your work, but I'm still curious if you wouldn't mind letting me know.
I mean, I think that if I'm going to use a name like that, I better hit what it is. So again, it challenges me. Like, if you know,
right.
But the history of the word atmosphere and atmospherics goes right back to high school for me.
Hmm.
When I got out of high school, I made these business cards. They had a sky on them. I have this binder of negatives that I still have. And I still have that business card in there.
Oh, cool.
And it was called Atmosphere Photography.
Huh.
When I started doing work in the warehouse party scene and clubs and all that, it was Atmosphere Design. So all my clients know me as Atmosphere Design. All my design and branding clients. I'm Atmosphere. So what was what's the logical name for my photography side? It's atmospherics. There's just no other name. To me,
there's no other name possible. Right.
Right. So
that's cool.
So that's kind of the history.
Yeah. 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 So, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It goes right back to the origins of when I started, which I'm kind of happy about.
Well, and maybe that's just my interpretation, but it also, knowing now a little bit more about your background and with the music, it kind of makes sense to me too, just as a, you know, from that standpoint. Yeah, because we never question, right, when a musician calls his band. I hear the kitty in the background.
That's Zoe.
I was waiting until my dog starts to bark as well.
Hopefully they won't start wrestling.
Yeah, that's right. Over the internet. Yeah, so exactly. So nobody, you know, would question a band. Why did you call this band such and such? I mean, maybe they might, but, you know, typically we're just so used to it. And then photography, we're so used to, well, people just use their name, but, you know, it's not really clear why. anyway. No,
it's a great question, I think, like, you know, because, I mean, naming something like, any like whether it's a track or whether it's an album title, whether it's a band name, it's such a process.
Oh,
either you have it right away,
right,
or you go through a lot of back and forth.
It's really hard
with your friend, with the people you're working with.
Mm-hmm.
Even myself, like I might have one word. Like, even if I'm naming, like I'm trying to come up with a caption for a post, you know, like I'll have one word, and then if the second word doesn't sound right, I can be sitting there for 20 minutes trying to fit, like just racking my brain, trying to find a cool word. And like, I find it important. Like, and hopefully I hit them right. I don't like cheesy sounding names or like kind of trite captions.
Right.
You know, that's my feel. Some people might find that mine are, I don't know.
Right. right.
But, you know, it's been a really important thing ever since working with bands and my the partners I had at the time, like trying to find cool names for things was very important to us.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, cool.
Let's talk about your picture. So there's a specific picture. That's actually the one that how I found you that I mentioned earlier. It's called Hazy Bay. I believe it is made on film. I think it's beautiful.
Thank you.
Could you tell me a little bit more about it? And we'll link to it in the show notes for our listeners as well. Would you mind telling me a little more about?
That one's taken in English Bay, Vancouver.
Hmm.
And it's like, it's interesting because that was a really, really smoky wildfire smoke summer.
Hmm.
And it's really crazy, you know, like some of the photos that people have reacted to the most of my recent images, a lot of them are really, really smoked out scenes from, from wildfires.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has this kind of, you know, they're beautiful, but at the same time, there's something kind of really disturbing about how and why we get these summers and falls now, springs that are really, really smoky and really dangerous for people to breathe, you know?
Right.
So, yet when you take a photo in them, a lot of them are very, you know, they're beautiful, like undeniable, you know, like and some of them have an apocalyptic type.
Right. That's true.
But that one I shot on CineStill 800 on, my old Pentax LX that I've been using for decades now.
Okay.
You know, and I still use that camera. It's a rock solid film camera.
Oh, cool. Is that a 35mm or is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Got it. Okay.
And I just went, like, there's lots of noise and grain in that I love. I mean, I think the initial photo is probably underexposed.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll take a grainy film and make it even more grainy. But
yeah.
Underexposing it, you know,
right,
like I just shot what I could at the time because the sun was coming down, like whatever light I could get, you know, it's there, and that's pretty much the color of it. I didn't go crazy in processing with it, or, you know, and then a guy, like one of the collaborators, used it for a cover,
right. Yep. Yeah, that's where I found, I think it's an ambient album.
Peter Bark.
Oh, yes. Yes, yeah, exactly.
One of the Interocean Records guys.
Yep. That's exactly right. Yep.
Yeah, I was honored for him to use that image.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really an Yeah, he's a talented guy.
He is. Yeah.
Oh, wonderful. So it was an evening picture. Did I understand that correctly?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the sundown.
Sundown. Yeah, it's very cool. Yeah, so we'll link to it in the show notes. It has this beautiful blue, almost monochromatic, we could say, right? Kind of feel to it, and then the sun is kind of this orange.
ball. It's just this ball. And the film just really cuts out this circle. It almost looks like it's.
Yeah,
you know, almost looks like it's pasted on there, but I can assure you it's not. It's definitely
it looks really great. So speaking of film, so you use film as a medium. We talked about this already, and including this image. But are you using digital as well? Is this correct?
So I'm using pretty much state of the art mirrorless Nikon.
Okay.
I'm using a Nikon Z2.
Got it.
And then I'm still using the film camera that my dad gave me. I still use this Konica rangefinder from time to time that I love, you know, like, and I still have my Pentax LX, which is Pentax's only really pro body they ever put out that was marketed directly to pros to go up against the F3. And it's just a workhorse. It's a great camera, removable prism, love it. And then I recently bought an F3. Through Japan. Like I buy a few, like a lot of my film stuff that I buy now, film equipment, I get in Japan. I bought a Hasselblad 500 cm through eBay in Japan.
Yep.
And these guys are just the best sellers. Like I personally feel, I've never had a problem with them.
Mm-hmm.
And the cameras, usually if you order a camera lens from there, it'll usually show up better than it looks on eBay, you know?
Yep. Yep.
So I can't say enough good things about that. And the vintage stock in Japan is, you know, I don't know what it is, but they seem to have a lot of it there, and not just Japanese cameras, but Hasselblads and things too.
They keep it in pristine condition somehow, it seems. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I pretty much use all those. I use the F3 the most these days, and the Hasselblad. And I take them on trips now too. I used to only take my film cameras on local or road trips.
Okay.
But now I'm taking them on my international trips.
Oh, really?
I'm making room for them.
So curious about that. So I travel, I do film too, but I've traveled internationally with film, but it's not always, well, I never had a major issue, but I had issues where they didn't let me, you know, with security and so forth. Okay. So did you ever... How do you deal with that, or how have you dealt with that?
Knock on wood, I've never had a problem.
Okay.
In security with my cameras. I mean, my cameras and all my gear stays up front with me all the time. I never check any of that.
Right.
I might check a tripod or whatever. Right. Like incidental things. My cameras, never check those. I always keep them up with you, as I'm sure most people do. But yeah, I've never had a problem. Like I've never, like, you know, they might go through it with a fine tooth comb sometimes. Right. But I've never had question on any of it. Thankfully.
What about the, I mean, I was sort of been more specific. I was specifically referring to film, you know, where they want to,
inspect
it. Where I basically didn't want them to have it go through the scanner, did you ever have experience with that, or
I've never had a problem with that, so I just let it go. I think if you shoot some really really high speed films,
mm-hmm.
you might have a problem with them. But from what I understand and articles I've read, that if you're not, you know, most of these detectors these days, you're not going to have a problem putting your film through.
Okay, so you let it. So you're okay if your film goes, even if it's exposed, you let it.
I haven't had a problem.
Okay.
If I'd had a problem with it, I'd absolutely So I can't speak to anybody who's had a problem with it, and I know that some people have.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay. Oh, that's good to know. No, and I haven't. So to be also clear, I didn't have a technical problem with the film. I just had the problem of I wanted him to hand check it, and they didn't let in certain locations. They didn't let me do that. So I basically wanted to avoid it going through the scanner. But you know, it's maybe I was a little over paranoid.
No. I mean, but you know, for good reason too, because I know that some people have, but you know, ever since I've been putting it through since I was a kid, I've never had it.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's good to know. That's good to know. Thankfully. Oh, cool.
Watch my next trip, though. It'll all come.
Yeah. Hopefully not. Hopefully not.
Exactly.
No. Well, let's talk about one of your other projects that it's called Mist. It's somewhat related, maybe, to the previous picture to some extent, but this also atmospheric. So, and we talked about this a little bit, but I noticed sometimes, not always, that you tend to have a monochromatic approach, let's call it that for now, meaning that there appears to be one dominant color scheme in your images. Is that a deliberate technique, Ross? And can you talk a little bit more about that?
Not really. I think with those, maybe you're speaking of something that might dominate in a green or a blue, maybe perhaps. I think it's a cinematic thing for me.
Okay.
That really evokes a mood. Like I'm never trying to just go nuts with color or whatever. I think every color I use has a place and it has a reason to be there, to try to evoke a mood and a feel. And I'm trying to do that in a unique way. And most of it stems from a cinematic grounding or a film analog grounding. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to really go nuts with some new digital process or something.
Right, right.
But I'm trying to get to something that talks to some, that hits your soul, kind of, right? Like
yep.
It's a feel and a mood and something you want to, that wrap around you visually, right? Like,
yep.
Like you want to be in that scene.
Mm-hmm.
That scene has a mood, it has a feel. And sometimes that's distant. Sometimes it's really silent and still. Sometimes it's powerful, you know, like sometimes it's just the power of nature around us to make us feel small or whatever. Right. Like,
yeah.
Like this is above us. Like these are powerful. The earth and the universe is more powerful than us. It's still going to be here when we're
yes.
And I really I really love tapping into that vast, that vast kind of almost lonely hugeness, you know?
Like, yep.
That's where I'm trying to get to a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, I feel sometimes, you know, the color helps with that impact.
Yep.
And sometimes I'm just going for straight up beauty, like, or something unusually beauty, unusual beauty, like otherworldly.
Yeah.
You know, like trying that's to get away from it being bound to earth and being bound to a literal world, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
I love that too. Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people, like almost some people might expect there to be more people or more of a human feel to some of my work, but it's not really what I'm doing. Like if it's part of the scene and it's in the scene, it'll be in the shot, but I'm not going to take that element and force it into a shot. I'm not going to put it into the shot.
Right.
Right. Like that's not what I'm doing. There's people who do that, whose work I love. Absolutely. If it comes up in my shot, it'll be part of it, but I'm not going to shoot around that just to put a person in it, because I think me personally, like a lot of times I'm traveling by myself and there is nobody else. There's nothing. There might be an animal. There might be a bird. There might be, you know, maybe something else, like something mm-hmm. floating through the sky. And that's fine. That's totally fine for me. You know, I think that's what I'm trying to evoke the most. It's just these powerful scenes, mm-hmm. you know, of the world around us.
Yeah. I think you do it very successfully. I think it's really beautiful work. And
thanks so much.
You know, on that note, when you're in nature, in the field, so to say, right? So you said you work by yourself typically, and what's your is there like a, you know, do you go visualize kind of what certain things already? Do you have a certain vision in mind, or is it very intuitive, very in the moment, or do you do a lot of planning around your, you know, various outings? I know, you know, being also a landscape photographer myself, you know, sometimes you can be very planful if you want to, you know, when is the sun rising, this and that, and direction and all that stuff. So you can.
I think as much planning that goes into it is where I'm going, the time I'm shooting, and just hoping for the best environmental conditions at the time. Like if it's local, I'm like, I can look out the window and go, oh yeah, there might be something probably happening somewhere.
I should looks pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I'm traveling, it's, you don't have that choice. And right. So it's either travel to areas where you have the best chance of this kind of thing happening. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't, whatever. And then I think that's the most, other than that, I'm in the moment. It's
just in the moment. Yep.
It's making a diversion to get to somewhere or stopping right then and there to be able to record it. Mm-hmm. You know, or getting up at a certain time, or that, like, that's what I love about the difference of how I like the, you know, whether I'm shooting locally or whether I'm shooting on a trip. I love the difference of that, because mm-hmm. when I'm shooting on a trip, it's all about the photography and everything that I do during that day.
Right.
It's like focus from the time I'm getting mm-hmm. up to, yeah, it's all about that. And then there's like more challenging times. Like, what do you do in, you know, you're out, you can only be in this location during the afternoon because you got to be right. somewhere else the next day or whatever.
Right.
so you're presented with this high noon light, not that much going on. And yet you're in this beautiful landscape area. So it challenges you to yep. kind of figure out how to make a shot from yeah. that, or you know, or not even take your camera out,
right.
you know, like,
right.
so there's all these different challenges that happen
yeah.
during the day when you're traveling, you know, like,
yeah.
So,
and do you tend to, I know many landscape photographers, right, that they focus around, you know, the early morning and blue hour and you know, golden hour and sunrises and sunsets. So kind of, where, yeah. you know, admittingly, especially when you're a color photographer, the colors are stunningly beautiful.
Yeah.
Is that kind of where you tend to be focused on, or do you, I mean, and then I understand, you know, sometimes you are somewhere and there's midday and, you know, you just yeah. have to still make something happen or try to. Would you still say that you're trying to be out usually during sunrise and sunsets and so forth?
I'd say so.
Okay.
I definitely. I mean, I really love early mornings, like
yep. you know,
before, like pre-dawn.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, like I don't do it enough at home.
I know. It's
because you
the
get
blue hour is beautiful.
Yeah. yeah. And then dusk light. I think dusk and twilight is probably the times I shoot the most.
Mm-hmm.
Like at, especially around here, like, you know, by the time I kind of get outside after my work day, and by then it's either dark or it's just approaching that. So just yep. by like my day to day life, naturally, that's when I'm going out anyway. So
right.
When I have my camera with me,
right. So then does that, I assume that means often tripod work, right? Because you're so early, you have long
yeah,
exposures.
Yeah, but okay. I tell you, it's the one reason why you know, with digital cameras, I'll use a digital camera until it becomes a game-changing technology. So with my latest Nikon, the fact that I can shoot with my 70 to 200, I can shoot at 200 millimeters at a 30th, or, you know, successfully, and even like down to like what, like a 13th of a second,
right.
if I like stabilized and with a usable photo.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
that to me is very important. Why I want that piece of equipment, because that's the kind of light I'm shooting in. That's what I.
Yeah.
Otherwise, with film, absolutely. I take a little mini tripod. It's in my bag all the time. You know, but my digital, I'm trying to do like, if I'm shooting. I do a lot of night skies, auroras, and stars as well, too. I try to incorporate them in an interesting overall landscape rather than just shooting stars and auroras. Definitely I'm using the tripod for that, you know, that kind of stuff. But anything like fog or super low light or whatever, I'm probably walking around and pushing my Nikon as hard as it can go to try to get something
right,
you know, like wide open in around that range,
right? So, got it.
And I find, you know, like you can there's a lot of really cool light, like white balance things
with the
light dusk with twilight times and all that too, so
Now, speaking of, since we're a little technical right now, but I think that's still interesting. What about focal length? You mentioned tele, right? 70 to 200. Is that one that you're often reverting back to, or do you have?
That's my go-to.
Okay.
For sure. Like 70, okay. 7200 is kind of my staple lens right now. It used to be an 80 to 200.
Yep.
But, you know, fast 2.8. That's such an integral part of what I do, that those lenses. And then, you know, I'll have my wide angle of 20 millimeter and then I've got some vintage 35s and I use my standard 50 quite a bit too.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, that's what I, when I'm traveling, that's what I have in my bag.
Okay.
I have my 70 to 200. I have my 1.8 20 millimeter. I have the 50 as a staple. It's just there. It's light. I can use it on my film camera too. And then I've got like a teleconverter that I use occasionally. I don't love to use that.
Yeah.
But that's the base stuff that I travel with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And then I've got like a macro, the 105.
Yep.
That I use occasionally.
Yeah. That's cool.
And then a vintage lens. I've all my vintage lenses adapted to be able to use on my.
You can use it on your mirrorless. Okay.
On my mirrorless.
Yep. Got it. Yeah, that's very cool. You
know, all my Pentax lenses and things too, which is pretty cool.
That's cool.
But really, most of the time, it's the 70 to 200, 50, and the 20 millimeter.
Hmm. Oh, nice.
Yeah. And I take it when I'm traveling, I take a backup body. I installed my old D750. I use it as a backup. And then whatever film camera I'm using.
Right. But yeah, you mentioned you're traveling both with film and digital, correct?
Yeah. And then the other thing that I do is I shoot, of course, I'm shooting like some video loops and things like that, right? So I have a Blackmagic cinema camera. That I'm slowly getting it, just using the Nikon, the Z7 II for that yep. now too. Like I'm finding ways to work with that footage, ways to grade it, where to make it look a bit more cinematic. I haven't, what you can do is you can send like a Nikon without getting too techy. You can send your Nikon in, and you can get the Nikon ProRes like adjustment for it.
Oh yeah. I heard about
Nikon
that.
Raw, yep. Nikon Raw. Mm-hmm. I was going to do that, but I decided against it. And then I've just been kind of grading, finding a really, good technique to work with that footage. I mean, the footage that you get, like the quality of the image that thing shoots just natively, mm-hmm. it's still pretty good. You know, the problem, with it not being camera raw is it can break down a little bit,
right.
When you try to edit it.
It's like a JPEG basically, right?
Yeah, when, it can be, I do a conversion to ProRes on it right away. And I don't know if that allows me, at that point it's like interpolated or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, can push it a little more, maybe.
maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. But I just watch for banding. Like if there's anything banding going on or whatever, right. I just don't use that.
So,
yeah.
Oh, that's very cool.
So.
So before we wrap up, a couple more questions. One is, I like to talk about a potential future project that I read on your website that you are working on a book project. Can you?
Yeah.
Could you tell me more about that?
Yeah. So I finally got my print site up. If you go to my website, there's now a prints tab. It takes you to the prints site.
Yep.
That took me a year to put that together. It doesn't look like, but just to select the images and really, really think about what I wanted to offer it took a lot and just working with my printer and doing conference calls with them. And it just took so long and, finally got that up. So, but what I've always wanted to do books and I just want to find a good process to doing them in short runs where you can say you're announcing, maybe you're going to release a book and just get as many orders, like pre-orders in to be able to like do a limited run.
Yep.
So I've got pretty much, I have a book layout already ready that I was working on before I did my print site. So it's kind of the next logical thing for me, I'm still considering the NFT thing. I don't know for sure if I'm going to do that quite yet, but I really like print. I really like the tactile side of photography,
What is NFT? NFT?
NFT is like the crypto blockchain images, that everybody's doing right now,
I'm not like that one. I'm obviously not following.
Yeah. Well, there's like, I've had a lot of people ask me about that.
Okay.
There's just so many artists doing that now. That,
okay. Is that kind of the artificial intelligence type stuff or is that?
Well, yeah, but NFT is more like, it's more like you mint your NFT, like your series of images, your video or whatever. And mm-hmm. then people pay whatever price you set it at. People pay that. In cryptocurrency.
Oh, it's more of a, okay, got it. Yeah.
My jury's still out of it. It takes a lot of energy to create those. There's an environmental aspect to it as well.
Okay.
I'm not got sure it. About. But if you go onto Twitter, and you get into the photography community there. This, that's what it's all about.
Okay.
It's all
okay.
It is.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. Well, cool. So, but you're working on this book project. Is it going to be, are you thinking self-publishing then, or are you thinking about working with a publisher?
I think I'd self publish this. I also like just with our record label that we're doing for Montane District and other people's, and the Instagram account for Norse Silvers, I'd sort of like to maybe see more things that we could do with that, and maybe a publishing aspect, or maybe, you know, we're already releasing music through it. So I know maybe that becomes the first Norse Silver book, you know, like maybe a published book. I'm tossing that around. Okay. I've worked with other people on, you know, Instagram with this idea, people contacts I've made through social media with this idea, but I really feel that it's maybe something that I want to do myself. I mean, that said, if there's, you know, a good book publisher approached me to do a book, absolutely, you know, I'm absolutely into that. But it's not something I'm pursuing outside of doing it myself right now.
Are you thinking, so you have obviously your prints available on your website for, you know, individual purchase. Are you thinking for the book project, something along the lines of maybe trying to put that together for next year? So for 2023?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
It would probably be later.
Late 2023 or something.
At this point. Who knows? I mean, I've got all the templates done to get something out pretty quick. So we'll see. I'm going to be making some changes to my print site offerings in January. I'm keeping things refreshed on that.
Yeah. That'll be cool.
So yeah. So that's kind of where I'm at with that.
That's awesome. Well, if you do that, then we should probably come back and then we'll talk about that. And
absolutely.
And that would be awesome. Well, good. Well, Ross, my last question, hopefully an easy one, is basically where can people best find you and your work online?
The best place to find me to link to everything would be my website, which is atmosphericsphoto.com. Okay. And you can link to my print site, to Instagram, and any other social media platform I'm on.
Okay.
Directly on Instagram, I'm atmospherics, at atmospherics. And that's a quick way to link to me as well. So.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, Ross, thank you so much for speaking with me today. It was really a pleasure and a lot of fun.
Thanks, Daniel. I really appreciate you asking me to do this too. It's been great. It's been fun.
Yeah. My pleasure. All right. This wraps up our episode with Ross Boswell, who's photographing under Atmospherics. Please check out his beautiful work. We'll link to his website as well as his Instagram on the show notes. Thanks so much for listening, and talk to you next time.